and for bearing with us, though we're terribly late getting here, having had a little problem with our plane. I have a great honor to be accompanied today by wonderful friends, very successful Republicans, and the people who have given me great heart and support in this rather arduous primary campaign. Rather unusual for us, but nonetheless a test of our conviction and deep feeling about what can be done in this state for our party and through our state for the nation. And so first I'd like to thank very much our controller, who's made such a singular success in having won an election in which no other Republican on the state level prevailed, Ned Regan, who is here.
Thank you.
And your Erie County executive, Edward Kowski, who is on my left here. Also a first-time winner for himself in his own career, which seems very promising from here out. And to, he tells me, Ed, the biggest thing that's happened here is the victory of the Bills over the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
And he noted, without the services of either Ed or Jack Kemp.
Hard to believe.
Hard to believe, right, right, right. And of course, we are all very proud, and I'm particularly pleased to have with me our former lieutenant governor for so long, the strong right arm of Nelson Rockefeller, and then governor in his own right, our Governor Malcolm Wilson. And of course, that man known to all, young and old, the people's lawyer, Louis Lefkowitz. And representing Bernie Kilburn, Marion Granowitz, the vice chairman of our state party. And for my own personal campaign, Al Marshall, who you remember was closely associated with Governor Rockefeller, who's been chairman of my campaign committee, Al. Also, as very well known here, Congresswoman Constance Cook, who's been co-chairman of my campaign committee. And finally, my own campaign manager, John Trubin. John. We'll take care of everybody. I'd like to say a special word about George. George Wessel is one of your labor leaders here, who has been associated with Dan Roblin, a prominent businessman in this area, in a labor management committee. Really, I don't need to make a speech if I just give you that committee by way of new thinking and new ways in which our state can be helped, and in which the nation can be helped, of which this is a very distinguished prototype. For George Wessel, in my judgment, and Dan Roblin, signal the way in which major economic problems are going to be solved in the future. We are not going to do it like others. We're going to do it in a very traditional American way. This country is down at the bottom of the ladder in terms of the competitiveness and the way, the economical way, in which it produces. We have always been number one. Today, we're number 10 among the chief industrial nations of the world. We've got the people. We've got the ideas. We've got the technology. We even have the machinery, though it's not up to date, in many fields, as witness, for example, steel and automobiles. But the United States is still number one in potential, but it's not actually number one. Hence, our whole economy has been too small to sustain the burden put upon it. The employment of 90-odd million Americans, the necessary defenses for a nation having such vast responsibilities as this one, the education of our youth effectively and adequately in their schooling, and in what is today their schooling beyond the secondary stage, the housing of our nation, which on the whole, considering everything, has made very inadequate progress, and other problems of the same kind. Now, one of the missing links has been an effective way in which labor and management can adopt to a new time. There's no reason why we should have so high an unemployment, for example, among minority youth, without even what seems a chance to have an entry-level job. There are plenty of government programs. As a matter of fact, our government programs on that are pretty good. For example, I am myself responsible for the fact that you can deduct from your taxes, if you're an employer, half a year's salary for a young person in a new entry job. And that's the way it ought to be. But we have not had the adequate means for bringing American business into helping us to solve this problem. And the Labor Management Committee technique, which George and Dan are trying in Buffalo, a technique which has now been quite successful in Jamestown, and which looks like it's got a real chance in Elmira, and which will ultimately, in my judgment, sweep the country, as it did in World War II, when it had a lot to do with effective and adequate war production, can be a very important answer to that. And I'm especially grateful to George, not just because he's for me, that's his privilege, and he doesn't have to be, in terms of his own discretion as a citizen, but because he is lending himself to a new way to break new frontiers in order to make our country stronger and more effective. And to show you how this ties in, too, not just to employment and inflation and the other problems which we are facing, but also to defense. Our country has never won wars because our country could match any enemy, plane for plane or ship for ship, tank for tank or man for man. We have won wars because when the time came and the button was pressed, we could turn out the goods in terms of war material in such a way as to inundate any enemy. And that's the way it ought to be. And that ties directly into the effectiveness of our industrial system. So, George, I'm sorry I picked on you for my speech today, but it's so relevant to Buffalo. Believe me, so relevant. I know that I've helped here in connection with the Love Canal and finally finding a way, an innovative way, to get those families permanently settled. But I tell you, and I love it, I'm very pleased and very proud, I might say that, Ed. And by the way, too, it's quite characteristic of me in that this was then negotiated between the United States and the state of New York. I have no fear whatever that people will not appreciate me because I'm not in the front rank and under the Klieg lights all the time. I think voters have brains and understanding as well, and rather appreciate the fact that where proper, you're a team player. And so I thank you, George, for allowing me to do this. And finally, in just one word, Vic Farley. Vic has been an extraordinarily stalwart friend of mine, and I'd like to thank him very much among his own people. He's just been absolutely great. A really model political leader, because believe me, there's nothing I have to offer Dick but hard work, unbelievable experience, an understanding of the legislative process, and a common purpose with him to serve the people of this community, who have great difficulties with employment, with housing, with a reorientation of the economy of a great center of transportation and communication to do other things in order to meet modern necessities. And with unhappily a 10% unemployment, certainly needs enormous help. And with a political leader like that, able to deal with people like myself, I'm confident that we can, as we already have, in our light rapid transit line and in other ways, bring the necessary help to the Buffalo area. And so, ladies and gentlemen, there are big purposes which are to be served here in this campaign. And I take no voter for granted. And I hope that you will go out today and tomorrow, there's still time, and do that personal job necessary to bring people to the primary poll. This primary election, hard fought, is going to be won based upon the number of Republican voters who turn out. It's good for them, it's good for me, and more important than anything, it's good for Buffalo and good for our state. Thank you all very much. I would like to have two of my friends and supporters have a word with you. It's a very great honor to be traveling with them today. They do me and my family great honor with their support. I'd like to introduce to you, for some brief remarks, Governor Malcolm Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just glad to be here with Jack Javits and all of you. To tell you why I support Jack Javits in a few words. He is without challenge the most intelligent, articulate, effective member of the United States Senate from any state, and his colleagues will tell you that. He has been an ardent champion of all the causes in the Congress which are important to New Yorkers, regardless of political affiliation. I worked with him, as did Nelson Rockefeller, for many years. I'm not going to recite the litany of what he was able to accomplish, but I would like to mention that in 1974, when we greatly needed federal operating assistance, subsidies, to hold down bus fares in upstate New York and bus and subway fares in New York City, I asked Jack Javits if he would undertake that. He introduced the bill in the Senate of the United States. He got it through the Senate and through the House, and that means $200 million a year of our taxpayers' money coming back from Washington to help hold down our mass transportation fares. And that is one of the many accomplishments of Jack Javits. I'd just like to say a word to is the Republicans alone, obviously, who can participate in the primary election tomorrow. Therefore, I speak about his Republicanism, about which unwarranted questions have been raised by his opponent. You will recall that in 1956, Jack was elected to the Congress, to the United States Senate. He defeated Franklin D. Roosevelt, Jr. Normally, he would have taken office on January 1st, 1957. However, at that time, we had a Democratic governor, Governor Harriman, and a Republican legislature, and the Constitution provided that if there was a vacancy in the office of Attorney General and the legislature was not in session, the governor had the appointment for the balance of the full term. Therefore, what Senator Javits did on his own was to refrain from swearing in as the United States Senator until the legislature convened on the 8th of January. The Republican legislature then chose Louis Lefkowitz as the Attorney General. And then Jack went down and swore in. And in the process, I might add, he lost seniority among his colleagues, which he would otherwise have had, had he taken the oath of office on January 1st. That's one of many marks of his Republicanism, and I just wanted to refresh the recollection of my Republican friends as to that.
Thank you. And here is the product which resulted. One of the best attorneys general that the state of New York has ever had, and one of the best friends our state has ever had, Judge Lori Lefkowitz.
Thank you. First, let me say thanks for your very friendly greeting. If you think you're happy up in Buffalo, so am I. The football Giants won yesterday, too. That was quite an upset. So for at least 1 week until the next game, I'm going to be a very happy guy.
Line service, Jerry phone, please.
Just let me add one word. Jack Javits deserves to be nominated tomorrow because he has earned it. Earned it because of hard work. I've dealt with him. In the 22 years I served as Attorney General, I had occasion to call on him very often. Connects with legislation, connects with administrative matters. I always found him very helpful. And I talk about matters in the antitrust field and the consumer field. I had his help all the time. So I want to add my voice to those of others that this is not only a must for the party, but this fellow has seniority, which means so much for this great state. To give up the seniority would be a crime. He's highly respected. He gets things done. He's my kind of a public official who works out 7 days a week in the public interest. For that main reason, I urge you to see to it that tomorrow not only did you vote, but please take a little time out this afternoon and this evening. Reach some people who may be hesitant about voting. Remind them. I speak of your relatives, your friends, and your neighbors. We need every possible vote. You can make Vic Farley happy by turning out a good vote for Jack Babbitts. Thank you.
I can handle those other senators and assemblymen.
Yes, I was just going to say that. Will you do that? Oh, fine. Ned's going to introduce to you. I just noticed and had called to my attention that we have some very distinguished state officials and good friends. Ned, would you do that?
Senator, with you today is the Albany delegation, the senators and assemblymen of the Republican Party, Senator Dale Volker, Senator Jess Present, Senator Walter Floss. And in the back is Assemblyman John Sheffer and Assemblyman Dick Kennedy, who are with you, too, here today. And now that I'm here, I guess my friends know me. I met Jack in 1964 after I'd won for councilman. He came to Buffalo, and from that moment on, for 15 years, he has helped me. He has helped the city of Buffalo. He helped the Erie County, and he's now been of great service to me in the state of New York. So for 15 years, I've had his assistance and the assistance of his staff as we have sought and received grants, cut the red tape, and made Washington focus on Buffalo and focus on Erie County. And I know Eddie Rutkowski's had the same, obviously, great experience. So we all need him, Malcolm. This is a Republican turnout. This is only Republicans can vote tomorrow. But frankly, every citizen, Republican, liberal, conservative, Democrat, every single citizen in Western New York has benefited from Jack Javits, and they can continue to for the next 6 years.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, because of the shortness of our time here, I hope you will forgive me if we have a mini press conference right here. I have a great pleasure in answering questions, and you're all invited to hear. So may we, from the press, have their questions.
Senator, you were a little vague in your opening remarks. Are you predicting a victory tomorrow?
I have never predicted victory for myself in any election, and I'm not going to start now. I believe that I can serve the people of this state superbly well for another term in the Senate. I believe that the issues are so grave, and who knows that better than I, that I could not walk away from this job with the assets that they had given me in experience and in relationships within the Senate and the Congress and in seniority. After all of this time, 24 years, longer than any other senator in the state's history. So I have offered myself first to the Republican voters and then to the voters of the state. I hope very much they accept. I want very much to do the job which I know so well how to do, and I hope very much they will.
In the absence of a prediction of victory, should you lose the primary tomorrow, would you be willing to endorse Alphonse D'Amato? And if you win, do you expect he'll endorse you?
I expect that I will. I believe that I will win this primary. I think that's an academic question. And I say that I'll review the whole political situation. Mr. D'Amato is on the ticket of the Conservative Party and the Right to Life Party. The Conservative Party was formed to politically destroy Nelson Rockefeller, Louis Lefkowitz, and Jacob Javits. So let's have a look at it. I believe I'm going to win. Anything else? Any other questions? Well, thank you all very much. You've just been great to come out. Very heartening to me, and I thank you.
Include challenges to five incumbents: Florida Democrat Richard Stone, Louisiana Democrat Russell Long, Nevada Republican Paul Laxalt, who was Ronald Reagan's campaign chairman, New Hampshire Democrat John Durkin, and New York Republican Jacob Javits. Of them, only first-termer Stone and fourth-termer Javits face serious challenges. For Javits, a major Republican foreign policy spokesman, it is the most serious of his long career. Liz Trotter reports.
The drama of the Senate race has focused on the Republicans. Senator Jacob Javits, a liberal, facing the first primary challenge in his 24 years in the Senate. Yes. An institution in that legislative body, a man who has always been considered unbeatable. Challenging him is 43-year-old Alphonse D'Amato, a Long Island town supervisor and a conservative who sees Javits as over the hill and out of step. Senator Javits announced his decision to seek a fifth term last February. That announcement included a startling admission from the 76-year-old senator. He said he was suffering from motor neuron disease, a condition that attacks the nerves in the body and causes its muscles to weaken. Javits admits he has trouble walking, yet he insists on campaigning and reminding each audience that there is nothing wrong with his mind.
The best proof of where I am and what I can do and whether I've got all my marbles is me. And so I'm here to demonstrate that for you.
D'Amato, a political unknown with a benign face and an instinct for the jugular, seized on the age and health issues.
Now, at age 76 and in failing health, he wants 6 more years.
Isn't it time for a change? Let's give New York a Republican senator we can be proud of.
What I think deeply concerned me, was rather offensive, was underlying the whole thing was the idea, I wish you were dead. That's pretty ghoulish.
The fact is that age and health are relative issues in this campaign, as they would be in any campaign.
While Javits is reserved and senatorial in style, D'Amato is brash and effusive. One political observer said, he makes you want to count your fingers after he's shaken your hand. Still, Javits has the advantage of being the incumbent and of being Jewish and liberal, two factors that have always served him well in New York. A D'Amato win would be a major upset, the tumbling of an institution, and the last hurrah for a major figure in New York politics.
Give me a few minutes of your time on Tuesday, September 9th, and I'll give you 6 years of mine. Thank you.
On the Democratic side, there is Bess Meyerson, the stylish consumer advocate who is best known for winning the Miss America contest in 1945. Meyerson is one of the two frontrunners in the race so far, expected to draw support from middle-class whites in the urban areas. Also a front runner and a liberal is Elizabeth Holtzman, a Brooklyn congresswoman. She emerged into the limelight as a member of the House Judiciary Committee during the Watergate hearings. A perfect foil to Meyerson, she is seen as plain, prim, and restrained. In the late 60s and early 70s, former Congressman John Lindsay was mayor of New York and best known for his walks throughout the ghettos of the city. He returned to his law practice 8 years ago and is now politically reborn. Throughout this campaign, Lindsay has been haunted by the charge that he brought the city to the brink of bankruptcy. John Santucci, Queens County District Attorney, is the only conservative in the Democratic race, but he is not considered a serious contender. On most of the issues, such as ERA and abortion, there has been little basic disagreement between Meyerson and Holtzman, and Lindsay has sought to emphasize the economy. As a result, personality is expected to play a key role in the voter's choice. The campaign has been scrappy, but not without its light moments.
Many people say the race is now down to one between you, Bess Meyerson, and me. And I think they're right.
Liz Trotter, CBS News, New York.
And that's the way it is. Monday, September 8th, 1980, the 310th day of captivity for the American hostages in Iran. This is Motor Crime Guide, CBS News.
Yes, we is to about 3.5% increase. Now, that's the kind of fiscal prudence that we must attempt to bring to government. But to try to say, well, you live in a high-taxed area where many of those taxes are totally outside of the ability of the local official to control, is really not germane to a Senate.
There are certain things that are within the ability of a local official to control. Given the argument about mandated costs, could you not have mitigated the burden of mandated costs that you talk about by putting the town's money before you had, do it earlier, into interest-bearing accounts rather than non-interest-bearing accounts, which according to a grand jury report cost taxpayers $3 million from 76 to 78. You were a supervisor before you were presiding supervisor, so that goes back almost 10 years.
I suggest to you that that report really refers to political jurisdictions and to political office holders who are outside of my authority. We're talking about the receivers of taxes, and we're talking about there were different interpretations under the controller's report that indicated that these tax receipts could not be placed into those interest-bearing accounts. But let's let the record be very clear.
The county attorney of Nassau County says that is not so. The towns of Nassau County are not bound by that prohibition against interest-bearing accounts.
That was a rather new decision that has indicated that a new interpretation, all of the receivers in all of the towns and all of the cities, by the way, both Republicans and Democrats, have been going under an old opinion which had indicated that these monies could not be placed in interest-bearing accounts. However, let's let the record show very clearly that where there was no question, and in terms of the money that came directly under my control, every penny that I could possibly put into interest-bearing accounts was. The record shows that. Going back three years ago, when I came in as the chief fiscal officer, I saw to it that we had a consolidation of our banking, that we reduced the daily accounts in terms of operating accounts. We have 14 depositories, and there indeed is a balance of $3.2 million, an average daily balance in there, and there's a balance in interest-bearing accounts of about $80 to $90 million. In other words, every penny that we can possibly put in to interest-bearing accounts under my administration and those monies that come under my control have been, and I am delighted. I have showed those records. You can see these records. What took place is a total distortion attempting to link a grand jury report with my fiscal management, and it just is not the case. It is a total distortion. And the fact of the matter
is distorting.
Well, if you attempt to take a report that replies to other jurisdictions
and to other officials and say, D'Amato, you are responsible. That is
specifically about Hempstead, Mr. D'Amato.
That's the receiver of taxes office. We're talking about a time and case or time and point that we're for many, many years the controller of the state and other legal opinions that indicated that these monies could not be invested in interest-bearing accounts. But with respect to that money that lay in, under my jurisdiction, every penny has been invested in interest-bearing accounts that can be. As a matter of fact, if we look at the records, you'll see that the investment income that is inured to the benefit of the taxpayers under my administration has soared. We've more than doubled it. And not just as a result of interest rates going over, but as a result of our holding our daily deposits in terms of the checking accounts down to a very minimal amount.
There's much more to be explored here, I'm sure, but at this point we have to take a break. We'll be back with more questions for Al D'Amato after these messages. The next question for Republican senatorial candidate Al D'Amato from Dennis Duggan of Newsday. Dennis?
Yeah, Mr. D'Amato, Thursday in a debate with Senator Javits, Congresswoman Liz Holtzman, the Congresswoman made some rather serious charges against you. And she said this, quote, "There is in Nassau County a pervasive system of political corruption in which the victims have been the middle-class taxpayers of Nassau County. Mr. D'Amato has been a part and parcel of that process." She brought up the question of the non-interest accounts, and secondly, brought up the question of unsecured loans from that bank which had the non-interest accounts. Can you respond to both those charges?
Number one, that matter has been the subject of a grand jury investigation and a report that indicated very clearly that there was no criminal culpability on anyone's part.
Are you talking about the October 1979 report by the Nassau County District Attorney?
Yes, and made a recommendation and that practice not be continued, and it referred to all of the jurisdictions.
Now, when those was that practice discontinued?
Those were monies that, for the most part, came under the jurisdiction of the receiver of taxes. As a matter of fact,
but can I ask you when that practice was
the
discontinued?
The receiver of taxes has been directed to set up a system whereby chargebacks to the municipalities that he will be investing money for will be made, and in the next tax collection period, those monies will be deposited in interest-bearing accounts. In terms of those monies, so that we don't confuse the two, that come directly under my administration, I have invested and seen to it that every single penny that possibly could be invested in interest-bearing accounts be invested in interest-bearing accounts. In terms of a loan that I made from the bank that I have been dealing with, my own family bank, for 10 years, which is one of 14 banks that does business with the town of Hempstead, I borrowed not $80,000, but $100,000, and I paid the highest prevailing rate of interest charged under the law. And I have on deposit in that bank all of our certificates of deposit of my family checking account, my family savings account. Indeed, it is the bank that I would most logically go to. There was no conspiracy, and I think what we're talking about is rather desperate charges, a cabal linked together, distorting how this came about, and it's beneath the level of a senatorial.
Well, Mr. D'Amato, were these loans, in fact, though, given to you at extremely low interest rates?
No.
Were they not 8 points below the prime rate at the time that you secured the loan?
If I might, they were given at the highest rate charged, permissible to be charged by a bank under the law. Now, here's a bank that I've been dealing with for 10 years.
The prime rate was 18% at the time, wasn't it?
Well, Dennis, again, the highest rate allowed under the law, and I don't know what that rate was, whether it was 10.5% or 11%.
Your rate was 10.8%, was it?
I paid the highest rate of interest under the law.
Did you secure that loan, by the way, with any of your assets?
I secured it with my own personal signature and with certificates.
I know, but with any personal assets?
Well, now look, if I go to a bank and I have monies deposited with that bank, and I've signed a note, my own personal signature, there's no